Welcome to Culinary Convos Willamette Valley Spotlight, where we talk about the best in the Pacific Northwest and where we highlight the greats that make up the valleys of Oregon State. This episode of Willamette Valley Spotlight is gonna be a hot one, but not so bad that you're gonna want to run to the ocean or the Columbia or the Willamette. I list these off because these waters help grow the peppers that eventually become one of the most curated organic and specialty hot sauces you can find. The ground, the sun, the air, and the water do a lot of the work, or so my guests might tell you, but if you follow them on Instagram or Facebook, you will see that there's quite a bit of human power behind this operation. Sean Winter is the owner, operator, farmer, and cultivator, and harvester of the peppers and hot sauce that is listed as one of the best hot sauces on Serious Eats by J. Kenji Lopez Alt, and the only hot sauce using the Hot Winter Pepper that has been raved about in Portland Monthly, HuffPost.com, GearPatrol.com's 5 Best Hot Sauces from the Pacific Northwest, TheSaltyOats.com, and 2017's Good Food Awards finalist, the Hot Winter Hot Sauce Company. You can visit his website, HotWinterHotSauce.com, and order individual bottles or wholesale. And you can also go to his Find a Store tab and buy it in the Willamette Valley or specialty stores near you across the U.S. But Sean also has a FuegoBox.com exclusive coming up with the Bulgarian carrot pepper and has been featured with Fuego Box on his Santa Fe Grande or Grand pepper and original Hot Winter pepper sauces. Want to get the latest batches and the newest heirloom peppers for your countertop and so that it can be included in your famous burger sauce? I promise I won't tell, but you will need to sign up for Hot Winter's newsletter and get ready to be amazed by the heirloom peppers and flavors headed into your email inbox. Fermentation, farming, and flames is the name of the game for Hot Winter, but also it is being a good steward of the land and of the people by keeping things local. The fermentation and the peppers offer a variety and aging quality like wine not found in other sauces and truly makes it one of a kind. So let's get started. Hello, everybody, and welcome to Willamette Valley Spotlight. I am here with Sean Winter of Hot Winter Hot Sauce. How's it going, Sean?
Pretty well. Thank you.
Awesome. Well, thanks for coming on, and I'm just going to go right into it here. Growing season for the peppers, from what I can tell, it seems to be April-ish to almost October-ish. I know there's stuff year-long you're probably going in and out on, but when growing through that season, does each month have its kind of like milestones, or is it April through August and then products growing strong and it feels all worth it?
There's definitely a rhythm to the season and to the year, for sure. We start, I don't have my own greenhouse. So I hire a greenhouse. It's somewhere between here and Salem. They're called Northwest Transplants. They just do greenhouse plants for seedlings for transplant. And since I'm renting my farm space, it's just a long ways before I might have the infrastructure to do my own starts. But anyway, they do starts end of February, first week in March, and then I pick up my starts usually around Cinco de Mayo and try to get in the ground as close to that as I can.
Yeah. And basically when you're kind of going through those things and you hit those milestones, basically does it feel like every year you're getting a different like taste of things? I know you've been doing this for some time, but basically have you noticed any changes in the way that, like, you know, your June and July feel in terms of like the growth rate and what you're having to do? Like, are you hitting new problems? I know one of the posts on Instagram that you hit, you had, what was it, a syphilids?
There's new things in part because I've moved around a lot. I've rented different plots.
Yeah.
And you know, each new space has its own challenges. We did. I encountered some phylons for the first time last year, which are annoying, but fortunately very geographically static. They don't move around too much in the soil. So they're fairly devastating where they are, but they fortunately don't spread very quickly throughout the entire field.
Yeah. It's not like a fungus or something that might spread through roots and that kind of thing.
Yeah, no, they tend to strangely circulate. Their life cycle takes them, vertically up and down in the soil quite a way, which makes them very hard to eradicate because they're capable of living quite deep in the soil. But fortunately, they don't travel horizontally very much.
Yeah, yeah. And so for the upcoming season that you've got, how many different types of peppers are you planning on growing?
Well, we have the core varieties. So we have the original, the hot winter pepper. We have the Santa Fe Grand, the Golden Cayenne, Bulgarian Carrot, to which we also had the Aji Cristal. We have the Aleppo, the Hinkelhatz, which also has Hungarian Hot Wax. And then the mild is a Poblano. And then I always do a handful of limited editions as well. So that's like about a dozen.
Yeah. I was going to say, I saw in that email or not too long ago, the Transylvanian like pepper. How did you find that?
That came from Adaptive. I think it's just called Adaptive Seeds. They are based in Corvallis, and they are particularly interested in sourcing and breeding plant varieties of all types, specifically for the Northwest. And so they'll take certain varieties that they like and try to breed for northern adaptability. They also have a few projects going where they're trying to dehybridize things, which is always fun and sort of challenging. They're really, really cool project. And I like to use their seeds as much as I can for different experiments.
And you mentioned going through the different seeds and different things. I always wondered, you know, like you said, you've kind of got your main staples. You have your hot winter pepper, you know, you got the poblanos and things. Do you have like complementary crops? I know you do the garlic, the fermented garlic and the ginger. I know I saw that is on sale. I'm about to miss out. I think I did miss out on the ginger. It's already out of sale because it's amazing. But basically, do you have like a complementary crop that goes with some of these peppers?
I mean, we rest, like there'll be cover crop in between pepper plantings. And I'm renting, the field that I'm renting now, it's owned by Ruby and Amber's farm. And they're run by a pair of farmers who've been working that land for about 20 years and are starting to rent off pieces of it to younger farmers. So I'm one of several farmers using that space. And, you know, they have like crop rotations going on. But as far as like planting things with the peppers, like right next to them, not as much.
And so basically when you're growing the peppers and you've had like different times harvesting certain peppers, you're always waiting probably towards, you know, peak ripeness, what have you. Then you're going into that fermentation mode. I was trying to think of, especially like I know my grandfather when he was growing certain things, you know, fried green tomatoes, like huge thing. And so is there anything like either with the garlic or any one of the peppers that you're like, I'm going to pick a couple of these early and make X, Y, or Z. Is there anything that goes into that?
No, I'm not as much with peppers. I don't know. Fried green tomatoes, I think, are a thing. Like you fry the green tomatoes because they aren't really good fresh, and everything's good fried.
Yeah.
And so generally we want as many of the peppers to ripen as fully as possible to get the best hot sauce that we can.
Yeah. Trying to get the most yield basically.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. See, I tell you, man, I try. And that was the other thing that I was wondering was I didn't know if maybe you've done this in the past. I'm not sure. And I will say in terms of growing things, I help my mom with herb gardens a lot. Obviously, I've told you about, you know, my grandfather, he grew green beans, corn, cantaloupe, you know, cucumbers, all those things. But I didn't know about peppers. basically, is there, I don't know if it's just exact to their fermentation or what have you, but have you ever thought about doing anything, whether it was with a hot winter pepper or anything else, that you could make like a gochujang style pepper paste? Have you done pepper paste with any of your peppers before?
You know, that's interesting because it's I easily could.
Yeah. I figured I'd ask you because I just always thought like Korea has like this gochujang, gochugaru, right? Which mm-hmm. is the actual flake. There's no other, like, you don't see somebody making like a jalapeno. If it's a jalapeno paste, they're not fermenting it, right? It's just like mashed jalapeno and they move on. I'm a huge fan of gochujang. I try to add it to different things, including just hot sauces in general. You try to mix it with things. And so I wondered about that, especially since you have a fermented sauce.
I mean, it's a thick sauce already. I mean, already it's kind of like in between the gochujang and the sriracha as far as like being pretty thick. It'd be pretty difficult to do the gochujang. I'm sure I'm mispronouncing that, but I mean, just in part because it's already... You know, it's already a more expensive hot sauce, and doing it in the gochujang style, it's just going to make it more expensive because you're going to kind of concentrate it even further. The gochujang is just a much more niche market.
Yeah.
Our whole kind of position from the beginning is to escape the niche market as much as possible, to make a hot sauce that is aimed at general consumers and not just hot sauce enthusiasts. And the gochujang paste is, you're really getting niche there.
Yeah. It's so, like you were saying, mainly it's going with the sauces and trying to get towards more of a mainstream deal so that not only for expansion, but also just having, you know, enough to sell for the growth of the business, I'm sure. Right.
Exactly. And it's also like, I mean, I've always wanted to, from the beginning, is to kind of demystify organic foods while also finding a year-round market for organic foods. And so, you know, the problem I'd been wanting to solve for myself when I started the business was A, to have a shelf-stable product so I could stop doing farmers markets, and B, to have a visual representation of organic food for consumers. Because especially, you know, 10, 15 years ago when I was doing a lot of farmers markets, there's a lot of explanation of what organic meant. It's a little more common now, especially in the Northwest. People have more of like an understanding of that and what goes into it. I just spent a lot of time at farmers markets talking with people and trying to sell them on organic food and why they should spend more money on organic food. And I liked the idea of having this kind of rainbow of hot sauces that could be a visual representation on the shelf of what people stand to gain with organic foods. And so that's always where it's come from for me. And it's, I've always thought of it as more of a food preservation thing. Yeah. So it's, which is like a little different than most packaged food manufacturers.
Yeah. Well, no. And you kind of hit it on the head of, I mean, that's why whenever I first was tasting your sauces, all I could think was, I mean, you had your batch numbers, right, on mm-hmm. each one of the bottles, and I'm going through it, and it's like, you know, there's so much, like, work and so much, like, actual, I don't know how to put words to it other than care. There has to be a lot of care. And that was the thing that I think whenever I see your hot sauce on a shelf, like you were saying, in terms of organic and all these other things, you hear tons of different stuff, none of which feels like it's making it more clarified. So seeing something that, you know, it's like if I see that sauce, you feel like it's not good for you because that's not going to happen. But then on top of that, you don't feel like you're going to get like emotionally hurt by that. And you know what I mean? Like what I mean by that is
I totally know what you mean. But I think also more than that, like I want people, let's see, there's an effort to decommodify that I'm going after, to kind of do with peppers what farmers markets have done with tomatoes, you know, which like people now have an understanding that the tomatoes are, that there are like commodity tomatoes that are the same across the country and kind of uniformly bland. And then there are, you know, like Brandywines, or there's, you know, Cherokee Purple, or the, you know, that there are these like, you know, or like with apples, you know, like there's a Fuji or there's a Honeycrisp, you know, and that these are specific things that have specific flavors and traits, and that they're different, and that there is an advantage to having a grocery store with 14 different kinds of apples. And that's not crazy. That's actually just kind of wonderful. Right. And I want people to see that with peppers, and I want them to see that, that frankly, that's as true as it is for peppers and tomatoes, it's that true for broccoli and kohlrabi and onion. Like, that's just how fruits and vegetables are. And that's one of the things that you can appreciate when you support sustainable agriculture. Like, that's not a thing that happens within systems of industrial agriculture.
Right.
And that's what I mean by, like, having, you know, that there's, like, if there's like six different hot sauce bottles on the shelf, they all have different colors because they're all using different kinds of peppers.
Right.
And like the red that each of those ripen to is like a different shade of red. And that doesn't happen when you just have like one kind of commodity pepper for you're using your hot sauce.
Right. Well, and you mention about the making it shelf stable, right? And making it something that can keep going. I really did wonder, what was that process like when you, one, I read the story through the Oats website, great article, by the way, that talked about you going through, like, you know, making your pepper, because it's not a hybrid type of process. It's getting it stable enough for growth and some consistency, not perfect, but like, you know, some consistency. And I always wondered, when you had, you know, the hot winter pepper kind of stabilized, you had it there. Was it like this, did it have like your stereotypical, you know, movie shine on high? Like, oh, like I finally did it. Or was it like, wow, first step done, 30 more to go. Like, is that kind of how it felt?
Oh, no, it totally felt like an epiphany. Because at the time, I didn't understand how many steps I still had to go. You know, like I had no idea how long the startup phase of a business lasted.
Right.
It was like way too deep to stop.
Yeah. No, I understand that wholeheartedly. Basically, it was like, I've got this thing that I know is special. I'm going to run with it. And yeah, I'm not going to worry about all the things that could smack me down. I'm just going to keep going. Right.
Oh yeah, totally. And I mean, there were so many, the level of unknown unknowns was like way bigger than I could have guessed.
And so far it's all been like totally worth it. Right. Like, you just keep going, and it, because the reason why I say that for you, I guess, which I don't mean to do, but is I look at, you know, your Instagram, the products that you're coming out with. Like I said, it just seems to be something that has a lot of care and a lot of heart in it, you know, and it just seems to be a great thing.
Well, thank you. I really appreciate that.
Yeah. Yeah. And the other thing that I was going through, so the shelf stable part, I appreciate sauces, hot sauce specifically, but even regular sauces that are shelf stable, because you can find ones that are shelf stable, like you said, that are industrial. Mm-hmm. And they're going to have a ton of stuff in it that you're like, I cannot say that word, which doesn't mean that it's bad, but it does mean that it's a lot of stuff I don't know, probably. But when you look at certain, you know, sauces, especially hot sauces that are stable enough and, you know, obviously have the guideline of like, this will change color, right? Mm-hmm. Like if you set it out on a table, it's going to change color a bit, but no worries, still good. Going through that, basically in the early point, did you have sauces that basically weren't at a stable point where you thought, like, yeah, this is good. Because anytime I get a hot sauce and I've got to stick it in the fridge, I automatically know I'm not going to use it as much. That's why I loved your sauce.
I try to keep it out of the fridge as much as I can. It makes me sad when people put it in the fridge. It congeals a bit too in the fridge.
Totally.
It just took some research and some trial and error. It's a pretty straightforward process.
So what are the excuses for these other folks, I guess? Just it's easier to make it that way?
I don't know. I think there's like liability benefits to telling people to refrigerate it. People have like a real instinct to refrigerate everything. People are really afraid of food and have like a fear of spoilage, and which is both rational but like a little excessive.
Yeah.
In our culture.
Definitely.
Most hot sauces don't need to be refrigerated, whether or not they, you know, I mean, the main thing preservatives are put in there is, you know, to avoid color changes or
basically to make it pleasing. they don't want somebody thinking it's gone off. Cause like you said, there's that fear, a scare type of thing. And that was the other thing I was going to go over was with all the batches that you've made. Like I said, I still have my couple, and with, has anybody gone back to you with certain batches or certain, you know, numbers on those that have become like really great years? Cause like, yeah. Cause I was amazed whenever I was looking through, and like you were saying, like the fermentation process and the peppers of that year, it's like every bottle is different. Every single one is like a one of a kind, which is amazing.
Yeah, no, the goal is to keep things, to go for a consistent level of quality, and then to keep the heat within kind of like a certain framework for each variety. But there's definitely some variation from year to year, and even from batch to batch. And I definitely have my, you know, my favorites. Yeah, I mean, I don't know. There's like a constant recalibrating. You know?
Yeah.
Even from batch to batch, there's like a direct relationship between the amount of heat you have literally to the amount of heat you have figuratively in the pepper. It's also going to change the water content. And then the heat in the warehouse is going to affect the fermentation time, and that's going to affect things. So there's like certain variables outside of my control. That I then try to like mitigate them in like the blending of peppers. I'll have peppers from my farm, and then also I'll contract with a couple of other farms, and then I'll have peppers that are picked at different points in the season. And so those might get blended together in different ways to adjust for various variables.
Well, and it's like you were saying, it definitely sounds like something that, I mean, is it, I guess I should say, is it something that you notice just on initial taste, or is it something that once you get it in a mash or essentially ready for fermentation that you can finally make that judgment of like the peppers I've included elsewhere have this type of like balance or heat to it?
Yeah, no, it has to, that is the tricky part, is it comes through more in the mash, you know, because the mash is going to be a concentration of a lot of peppers, and any batch will have, you know, there'll be mash from, I'm doing like 40 gallon batches of hot sauce, you know, and so it might have 6 or 10 different mash buckets that are getting combined. Any batch, you know, depending on how the season is going, I might have to taste, you know, each bucket as I'm blending for my different batches, you know, but each bucket is going to have hundreds of peppers in it. You know, if you're just tasting one or two peppers that are going into a batch, like you're never going to get a realistic impression of that batch, because, you know, any one or two peppers isn't going to really sway the batch.
Right. It's a collective. It's a symphony.
Right.
Yeah. I guess whenever you're going through those tasting, I mean, do you almost have like a kind of like a personality profile of each like batch at that? Like, is there a certain point? Is it closer towards like a certain age that they really develop their like own personality, and you can kind of judge like this one's gonna be the good one. Like this is, like is there a certain point of that, or is it more of like you kind of have to ride till the end because there is that much change?
A little bit of the latter. And I mean, I've been doing it for a few years now, and I have a sense for how things are going. I have a sense for like the major variables that I'm working with. I'm out. I know how hot it's been. I know what the weather's been like. I know if it's dry or if it's wet. And I have like a rubric for how I think our things are going. But there's always changes that get made at the final mixing.
Yeah. Yeah. Especially coming from the other farms and trying to judge, I mean, are they geographically that far away from you that you think it's going to be a different, you know, type of summer for them compared to you?
Not totally. I mean, they're still in the valley, although, you know, the smoke will affect us differently.
Yeah.
And the soil is different from spot to spot.
Yeah. Yeah. Nutrients, man. Nutrients. Like you gotta have a lot. Like, oh man, the soil is a huge deal. And
oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's, and so that's why it's so great to hear that there's folks throughout the valley that are kind of renting these areas where you can grow and rotate and change. How did you figure that out? And I'm being honest here, because like when I think of a farmer, you think of somebody who just owns that property, owns the land, right? If they're renting it, they're like renting it from like a big corp something or other, right? Was it kind of like networking? Like, was it like you started talking to, because you were talking about like the seedlings and how they start. Was it kind of talking to them and it was like, well, I've got to find X, Y, or Z to grow? Or is it just like you go and you start looking through different, like, you know, farmer things and it's like, bam, there it is. Like, it just shows up.
Let's see, my current spot was definitely through networking. I think the last few spots have been through networking. There's a pretty good network for food manufacturing in the valley. And it's through that network that I found my current spot. There are people who used to sell produce to someone else that I knew who was manufacturing. There's also FarmLink, which is run by Friends of Family Farms. They generally have bigger leases.
Yeah.
But that's all private. That's all just landlord to tenant, one-to-one relationships. They're not part of corporations or anything.
Right.
There's a lot of networking opportunities, yeah, in the valley. That's one of the main perks of being here.
And speaking of which, is there anything in the valley, whether it's a product, an item, part of the weather? Because I know, man, farmers and weather, it is a love-hate relationship that will never like go away. But like, is there something about the valley you can't imagine living without?
I like it here. I like being close to the mountains. And I like our water supply.
Yeah.
You know, it's a pleasant place to live. There's generally good soil and good access to water. And there's a lot of resources as far as connecting smaller food manufacturers.
Totally. Yeah. And that was the thing that I find to be just in abundance here. People understand it's for growth and it can do this and that. There is a genuine, we're doing this all for each other, because otherwise, like, we're all going to be under one title head, right? Like, we all want to have our own. We want our own stake in things. And that's what I love about the valley, is it seems like it's this thing of like, no. Like, success, failure, doesn't matter. I'm riding this and I'm going, right? Like, this is going to be my stake. That's what it seems like. And so that was the other thing that I was wondering, is basically in the valley, when you've grown and you've done the things that you're doing, what do you think has been the biggest change for individual, you know, like producers of things? Has it been getting things to market and sale? Because everybody talks about the COVID and how that was, but that, for somebody like you with a hot sauce brand that is shelf stable, and it's not like, a restaurant individual, you know, but you still have some restaurants that I'm guessing would go back and be like, yeah, no, we want, you know, this type of sauce. We buy it here. I mean, what has been the biggest change you've seen here recently?
COVID was a big change, and it was fairly fluid for us to pivot towards more online sales. The bigger impact to my business was the fires and the smoke.
Yeah.
And that's a much bigger worry for me moving forward is the likelihood of that happening again. Because the smoke damage was pretty devastating for me. From a yield perspective, it was really bad.
And so everybody's sitting there going, air quality, and you're just like, amen. Like, I need
air quality is bad. I mean, it's very, very worrying. It's absolutely my biggest concern. Yeah. I mean, climate change is a big problem. that's kind of the biggest indicator.
So what I will ask just super quick, the last one of a regular question here is, you know, in your product line, whether it's a favorite that you have in your products or a favorite food memory with your product, what comes to mind when you think of those?
I think so. So my favorite pairing is just to have it with goat cheese and crackers.
Yeah.
Which I think is really, really, really good. You just kind of like serve the goat cheese with some hot sauce on top and then spread it on crackers.
Yeah.
As an hors d'oeuvre when you're having guests over. I feel like my favorite memory of the hot sauce, though, is when I go, my brother comes out a lot of years, and he kind of likes to help me for a couple of days on the farm with my planting push.
Yeah.
And then we go to Smith for a couple of days and go rock climbing. And, we just, soft boil eggs on the little camp stove and have them with bread and hot sauce. And that's kind of what we'll live on for like the whole time we're at Smith.
Oh yeah. That's like perfect. That it's not totally weird. Egg salad, but it's close. Like it's got the acidity, right? Like, yeah, that sounds amazing. That
yeah. No, if you have like a jet boil and just boil a bunch of eggs,
yeah,
red and hot sauce.
It's perfect. Yeah. Well, and you mentioned like your brother comes out a lot. It really does seem like, you know, definitely an individual effort on your own, but it seems like family quite a bit plays into like with helping and going through those things in terms of planting and all those things. What do you think has been like the biggest help in planting? Is it more hands or is it taking like better care of yourself and understanding yoga and those things?
Some of each.
Sure. Yeah.
Definitely some of each. I'm definitely more efficient than I used to be. A lot of farm activity is highly learned activity, and it's a little difficult to explain, but things get into the body memory and they get easier as they get more fluid.
So it's just repetition. Repetition makes perfect, it seems like, and learning from the prior mistakes, I'm sure. Yeah. Oh, man. Well, the last one here, like I said, I know we're getting on our time here. I am a huge overalls fan, okay? I saw your photo on the website. You've got your overalls on. Do you wear them often or do you go more of like the Asian, Southeast Asian method of you cover everything, but it's like a light, breathable, like clothing type of method?
Both. Yeah. I mean, I wear the overalls. Yeah. I wear the overalls in large part because they cover and they assure that my shirt that I will not get a sunburn like between my shirt and my pants.
Yeah,
which I have done before on plant out day, and was both embarrassing and painful. And the overall solve that problem, and then they also provide like a chest pocket for my phone, and I can listen to podcasts.
See, there we go. That's why. No, but that was the other thing that I was going to ask. So you've got your phone for the podcast and those things. Any other tools that you carry with you? What are your must haves in the bib pocket?
Oh, and I mean, that's all that goes in the bib pocket, but pretty much just gloves and like a
the hand. It's a handheld scythe, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That okay. and then the straw hat is the most critical thing.
Definitely, totally breathable, very light. Heavy winds, you got to have like a strap. You got to have that. But yeah, especially if you've got something in the brim to secure it, usually you'll be okay. But definitely, I say mine, by the way, if I could farm more, I wish I could. I'm stuck to herb gardens and stuff. I'm living in an apartment right now. I'm one day I'm finding something, but for right now, bib front, I am beard comb, box cutter, a carpenter pencil, and then a pen. And then on my side pocket, so your lateral leg pockets, I've got my glasses. I've got a little like cleaning towel for that. And then I've on my left side, since I am a habitual, just messy eater, whatever, I've got just like your I don't care rag, right? Like if I spill something, I'll clean it up with that or do whatever. Because whether it's my clumsiness or messiness, I can use that, right? That's kind of the things that I go for. And like I said, I'm going full out with everything overalls. I don't know if my wife likes it, but I love them. I can't get enough of it. All right. Well, hey, Sean, I really appreciate your time and coming on here and having a good time. Would love to do it again, just because, like I said, you seem very, very knowledgeable on all of these things going throughout the valley, and especially farming in particular. Would love to go over vinegars. That's for sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. Well, you have a good rest of your day, Sean, and I will talk to you later, good sir.
All right. Thank you, Devin. Take care.
This episode of Culinary Convo was written, produced, edited, and created by yours truly, Devin Ream, and is a part of Mouthful Productions. Please check us out on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook at Culinary Convo, and our website, culinaryconvo.com, for recipes, episodes, resources, and send an email to culinaryconvopod@gmail.com with your fan suggestions or recipe submissions. You can also support the podcast by going to anchor.fm/culinaryconvo1/support so we can purchase cooking or audio equipment to help create a better podcast, or by using the funds to help further the exploration of Culinary Convo by ordering subscription boxes, food kits, or ordering food products to review. So shout out to our first supporter, Convonaut Dylan. Thank you. I also want to give audio credit to Soundtrap for our intro, transitions, and outro music. Thank you.